And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Today, we have a packed program this morning. We're going to be discussing legalizing marijuana. This topic will definitely be debated in Vermont this year, and we'll have multiple programs, of course, on this program over the course of the next few months, and have different perspectives, those that are for legalization, those that are against it, and all arguments in between. So if you wish to hear from a certain person, I urge you to email me at msmith@radiovermont.com. I'd like to get your perspective on what type of person you would like to have on this show, because it's important. This is going to be an important debate. This is an important public health debate as well. And today, we'll talk with Brian Flynn, who's the board president of the Vermont Public Health Association. His organization recently had a conference on the health effects of marijuana. The Public Health Association is a statewide membership organization that seeks to positively influence the health of all Vermonters and provide an important voice on public health issues. And then we'll turn to my friend Fred from Moncton Ridge. He's going to call in. Fred, I asked to call in, and he had asked that he'd be interviewed, or that we interview someone who uses marijuana, and he suggested himself. And I said, why not? Why not have Fred on? So we'll ask Fred to call in after we get done with Brian Flynn. And then lastly, we'll speak with Debbie Haskins. She's the executive director of SAM Vermont. SAM stands for Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which is a statewide coalition of Vermonters who are concerned about the legalization of marijuana and think that legalizing marijuana poses a threat to Vermonters' health, economy, youth, education, highway safety, and workforce. And yesterday, the phone lines were full during open mic, so I'll try to leave some time for your phone calls towards the end of today's program to discuss issues that are important to you. And, you know, yesterday, and I apologize to Ken from South Burlington, I was particularly interested in the comments he was making about more and more state managers, government managers, becoming political appointees. And because of the time constraints, I just couldn't fully explore the issue that he was discussing. Perhaps Ken can call back during our open mic time towards the end of the program. And also, I was reading the paper the other day, and I was surprised what Matt Dunn had said, or at least repeated to the press what appeared to be a slam on Phil Scott. He said, quote, he drives really fast, he goes around and around and never gets anywhere. First, most race fans. He was, of course, talking about using the analogy that Phil Scott's a race car driver. First, most race car fans will disagree with him, but the issue that Matt Dunn has got to be careful about, I think, is he's got to broaden his base, and he can't be viewed as this Google exec that's this white-collar elite class and not be part of understanding or have an understanding of those that consider themselves blue-collar. I thought it was, from my point of view, a strategic mistake that really alienates those working Vermonters. And what was particularly was the timing. As he was saying that, of course, you know, all across the state, Phil Scott and his organization was promoting the Wheels to Warmth program, which had a record day, by the way, last Saturday, in providing monies going to buy heating fuel for those in need. Wrong time, wrong message for Matt Dunn. Be interested when we go to open mic towards the end of the program what you think. And also during open mic, those that oppose the Addison Pipeline, I'd love to hear from you and the reasons why you oppose the Addison Pipeline. And in the news this morning, just something I just wanted to bring up. You all know that I have this really big interest in scams, really big interest in people, especially elderly people getting scammed. And of course, there's a new scam out today. Coming across the Associated Press wire, the Vermont Attorney General's Office and the Bristol Police Department are warning of a scam targeting local businesses with what purports to be a school informational campaign. Authorities say businesses are being asked to buy ads on an educational brochure that will contain messages about drug prevention and similar topics. The Attorney General's office says the salesperson promises to deliver educational folders to students free of charge. This is a scam. So Bristol police say the scam artists have been using names including American Youth Group and the National Campus Professionals. Businesses who get this pitch should contact police or the Attorney General's office. It is really important that you do that. And, you know, God, we see these scams every day, and they seem to be getting worse in terms of the number of scams and the sophistication of scams. So if you hear about this scam, contact the Bristol Police Department or the Attorney General's office. But for most of the program today, it's the subject of legalizing marijuana. And I think I owe it to you to give you my opinion. I think we need to go slow and tread carefully in this area. I mean, the proponents say that Vermonters are using it already and spending between $125 to $225 million in the underground economy that's linked to other more dangerous and addictive illegal drugs. The assertion is that legalizing the recreational use of marijuana, the state would be protecting those Vermonters from both prosecution and hardcore drug dealers. Also through legalization and regulation, marijuana sales, advocates would argue, would bring in millions of tax dollars to replenish the state's depleted coffers. And I'm a little bit skeptical of this argument. Sophisticated criminals and those syndicates, and there are criminal syndicates and violent gangs that continue to undercut the legally sanctioned government market, they always will be there. They will always undercut it. And Colorado found that the estimated revenues that they thought they were bringing in never materialized. And that was partly because of this underground movement that undercut their revenue sales, but partly because they underestimated the cost of the regulatory system to put in place to regulate legalized marijuana. And then there's the, Vermonters really do not have clear answers to questions. And there are a lot of questions with this. You know, issues like educating our youth about the effects and the medical risks associated with marijuana use at a younger age. How do we do that? How do we reconcile the state marijuana laws with the federal drug laws, especially the banking laws and the products that cause overdoses? And how do we build and maintain the infrastructure to regulate the industry? And how do we prevent the diversion of marijuana to other locations where it is not legal? I thought I owed it to you to just give you my opinion of where it is. I know others disagree. We had Senator Benning on this show that talked about the reasons he supported it. But I thought before we had the conversation of marijuana, I owed it to the listeners to at least give you my thinking of where we're going. But I enjoy a robust discussion about issues, and I like to hear from all sides. And I'll continue these discussions over the course of the next few months. So I just wanted to make sure that got those things out of the way. You know what the program is going to be all about. And we would welcome you joining the conversation at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255, toll free. In a moment, we'll speak with our first guest, Brian Flynn, president of the board of the Vermont Public Health Association. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. In this segment, we're turning our attention to the health impacts of marijuana. And we'll do that by welcoming to our Radio Vermont studios, Brian Flynn, president of the board of the Vermont Public Health Association. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
And if you wish to join our conversation, please call us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Brian, could you give us a bit of a background about what your organization does and how you do it?
Sure. This is just a group of public health professionals. They come from academic institutions like myself, from UVM, for hospitals, nonprofit organizations like Lung Association, Heart Association, Cancer, the Health Department, and from private organizations that are interested in, community or population health. So this is a completely volunteer organization. We don't have a permanent staff. We just have a little administrative help, and we meet in various places once a month. The purpose of the organization is to educate ourselves about important public health issues and to provide some education to the public, and also to advocate for policies that we feel are important for the health of the community and the environment.
Other than marijuana, which we'll get to in just a moment, but what other issues have you looked in the past?
We spoke out on the vaccination issue last year. That sort of came as a surprise to us, as it came to a lot of people, but it's a very, very important one. Fluoridation. We're looking at paid sick leave as an important issue. We have a general umbrella approach called Health in All Policies, where we try to look across the board at all kinds of public policy decisions to see what their impact might be on health. And in fact, Governor Shumlin created a statewide task force just a month ago, October 6th. It'll be a task force to be chaired by Commissioner Chin to explore the Health in All Policies approach to state policy development.
And are all your board members sort of health related, or is it they have diverse backgrounds?
Pretty much all health related, absolutely, and public health specifically.
And your membership, who's your membership?
The same. Okay. You know, we're about 100 people from across the state. We do have people over in the Connecticut River Valley, down in the southern part of the state, a pretty heavy concentration in Chittenden County and Montpelier area.
And how did you get interested in this?
Oh, well, goodness. My research has focused on how to reach people with effective messages that would help them improve their health. So, what do you say to kids to help them avoid tobacco or alcohol at an early age? What should doctors tell their patients about these things? How do you convince people to get cancer screenings at the appropriate intervals and that sort of thing? So I spent 35 years doing research projects focused on these things, and here's the Public Health Association out advocating for this kind of thing on a statewide scale. So it's just a thrill to be able to go out and work on a bigger scale and beyond the more limited scope of a research project.
How do you get kids to stop smoking?
well, we're doing pretty good. There's a pretty long list, but price has something to do with it. Social norms have something to do with it. The advertising restrictions are huge, and positive advertising showing that smoking is a really bad thing, and that most people don't smoke, and that it causes tremendous harm later in life, have had a big impact on kids.
We're speaking with Brian Flynn, who is the president of the board of the Vermont Public Health Association. In a moment, we'll talk about the health impacts of marijuana. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. You just had a conference in Burlington, I believe it was, and what was the purpose of the conference?
So we knew that the health department had been doing a very careful look at the literature on the health effects of marijuana use in preparation for this upcoming legislative session. They do what they call a health impact assessment. So we wanted to learn what we could from that review, and we had a presenter from the health department, but we also wanted to learn what we could about ways to mitigate potential harms that might arise as a result of wider use of marijuana. And so we had a speaker from a public law firm in Minnesota who talked to us about the lessons from tobacco control that might be applied to developing a regulatory regime for marijuana legalization.
And so those were the participants that presented. Who were the people that were in the at the conference?
Well, it was a public event, so yeah, we do have a list of people who signed up, and I can't tell you who all those.
No, but I guess what I was professionally, were they legislators? Were they health professionals?
I would say mostly health professionals. It was held at the Davis Auditorium at the UVM Medical Center. So we were looking for students and healthcare professionals and the public health professionals.
And what were some of the findings that you discussed?
Well, so one of the big issues here is that the research in marijuana health effects is a little thin as compared to tobacco and alcohol, which have both generally been legal. Tobacco has always been legal, and alcohol for the most part. So we have very rich research record on health effects, both of those things. But marijuana is a Schedule I drug at the federal level. And access to it has been really restricted, and it's been a big constraint on research. But for the research that's available, the health department did a very systematic scan of the literature. And here's what they came up with: some pretty strong evidence on for regular use of marijuana impact on mental health, such as depression, psychosocial functioning, and other drug use. Less strong evidence on anxiety, schizophrenia, and brain function. Pretty strong evidence on motor vehicle accidents. Weaker evidence because we just don't have much evidence yet on child poisonings. Pretty strong evidence on impact on airflow and chronic bronchitis, stroke, heart attack, reproductive health. And for youth, early and heavy use predicts future dependence and impacts academic performance. So it's not a totally harmless substance.
So when you're talking about mental health and you talk about depression, that's the result. I mean, you could have depression, you could have psychological dysfunctions, you could have other drug use, anxiety. When you talk about injury, you could have a motor vehicle accident, you could have child poisoning. When you talk about respiratory, it may cause chronic bronchitis, may cause low-term airflow, and stroke and heart attack. That's what you're saying here, right?
That regular use is associated with increased risk of these things.
Okay.
That's correct.
We're speaking with Brian Flynn, who's the board chair of the Vermont Public Health Association. Would welcome your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to the phones and Larry from Barrie. Larry, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. I've been going to call for some time about this marijuana business because I'm really concerned that if they make it legal, that's going to be a real problem for Vermont. And especially with the children. I hate to see the children be exposed to it because the next thing you know, they'll be using that, and then after a while that's not strong enough and they'll be going on to something else. And God only knows we don't need any more drug addicts anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really, really concerned, and I hope that when they vote on it, they don't have a vote by the legislature, that they have a vote by the people, a referendum by the whole population, so everybody has a chance to express their feelings.
Well, thank you, Larry, for your phone call. Of course, other states have implemented by referendum, and it's been sort of chaotic as they've sort of scrambled. Colorado, they never expected it to pass, and all of a sudden they were surprised when it did, and sort of it was a chaotic. We don't have a referendum vote in Vermont. It's going to be the legislature, right, Brian?
Yeah. So one of the benefits of putting it through the legislature is that you can craft strong regulatory restrictions on things like where you can smoke marijuana, and you can take these lessons pretty directly from tobacco control. You want to have restrictions on smoking, for instance, public places, parks and campuses, workplaces, perhaps multi-unit housing. You want to have strong regulation on youth access, minimum ages, maybe child-resistant packaging. Particularly, you'd want to focus on marketing and advertising, because this really flavors youth's perceptions of whether it's a good thing or not a good thing. And so we found it's advertising and the media really, really powerful influences on how kids think about these things. So, and you know, because it's still illegal at the federal level, you know, I don't think the First Amendment protections apply here in this case. And so I think at the state level, you have the opportunity to craft pretty strong restrictions on, say, mass media, outdoor advertising. We still have buses, although we don't have billboards, point of sale, and perhaps labeling, which is another whole issue, dosage and, you know, consumer information about what's in these things. So those are some things that I think ought to be considered.
Brian, just out of curiosity, when we're talking about the effects of marijuana, are we talking about the effects of smoking it, or the effects from eating it, or both? Because candy is a big thing in Colorado.
That's right. that's a tough one, because we don't have much research, much of a research record on the edibles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly based on smoking.
So the health effects of edibles are the data is just not there, right?
The data is just not there, but I mean, you'd have to say that the constituents are pretty much the same for what's in the edibles as what's in the smoke. And the smoking has probably additional risks because of the combustion, but what the basic complicated constituents of marijuana, which is a little bit beyond me. I'm not a pharmacologist,
right.
And actually, there's a lot that's not known about it. Probably pretty much the same in both forms.
Was there disagreement or agreement in areas? Was there disagreement in any of these areas, or was it just sort of information passed out or discussed?
Well, there was no disagreement about it. There was no challenge to this in the meeting that we had. Mostly people were interested in following up on some of these specific points.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there disagreement in the general public about the impacts of these, the impact of mental health, for example, or the impact of stroke and heart attacks and those sort of things?
What I have seen in looking across, you know, different reviews is pretty much the same thing. I think that some people would de-emphasize the negatives. There are some people who are like very strong proponents of legalization, and so they frame it as not as harmful as tobacco and not as harmful as alcohol when abused and so forth. But it's not harmless. Mm-hmm. So you have to really turn that around and look at it, you know, for what it is, and not in comparison to something else.
We're speaking with Brian Flynn, who's the president of the board of the Vermont Public Health Association. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Johnson and Bill. Bill, good morning. You're on open mic.
Oh, good morning. I'm glad there's a public health perspective being explored on the subject. Unlike gun control, where criminal statistics are much more informative than public health opinion, this is an area, I think, where public health professionals, researchers, and statisticians, and so on, will be quite helpful. My biggest fear, and I grew up in a world where 10, 12, 13-year-olds smoked pot at South Burlington High School in the backyard, and it was easy to obtain. So I'm in favor of limited legalization because those same people who sold us marijuana later sold us LSD and methamphetamine and so on. So I'm in favor on strictly those grounds. I don't care much for the libertarian perspective on it. My main concern is over food, candy. If you create a market, regulate it, sanction it by the state for this particular drug, and you allow for the food stuff, you're basically giving somebody a hidden way to consume in the marketplace, in the car, and on the job. It'll be real easy for somebody to chew down a laced Oreo cookie or whatever it is. Bad for the economy, bad for the workplace, bad for workplace safety. You could have a nurse working on your mother who munched down a little brownie in the morning, and there's no way you're going to be able to tell. And that problem will present itself over and over and over again in the evidence we see from Colorado and other states. The bottom line is, if you have to prepare it from the original, how God made it, weed, and you have to smoke it, it's a process, just like if you have to go home and mix a martini or crack a beer, you're not hiding it. So I would caution legislators against providing for any legality of food stuff except those that people make on their own at home.
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate the phone call on that. And that is what Colorado is struggling with, is those edibles. I mean, that's where they're seeing a public health issue, it seems, in overdose or too much consumption of that, and bad things happen. So was there any discussion dealing with the difference between the smoking of marijuana and the edibles?
So one of the things that Colorado has come up with that they're just testing right now is an equivalency system for the comparing the potency of edibles with certain amounts of marijuana content to smoking a certain amount of marijuana. And so this is going to give us sort of a standard way of measuring units of potential impact. I'm not expert in this area, but it's a beginning. I've heard this argued in both directions, that there shouldn't be edibles because it's too easy for children, and as the caller mentioned, maybe in workplace and so forth. But I've also heard people argue, well, it should only be edibles because of the risks of, the products of combustion when you're smoking, which uh-huh. we know about from tobacco and so forth. So this is a really thorny issue.
If you look at Colorado and its experience, the edibles in particular, that's a massive commercialized operation. I mean, those are big industries that are looking at how to sell the edibles and how to produce the edibles. Did the conference look into sort of how do you keep up with regulation as you have these commercial operations booming in various communities, in various states?
No, we didn't talk about we just scratched the surface, and we were focused on the health effects, and these are really, really big issues. I suppose they may have been addressed in the recent Senate hearings, but I don't know if they were addressed from a objective point of view or mostly from the point of view of proponents of various commercial approaches.
What happens now? Where do you go from here?
So we're in the process of developing a position. The conference was really to educate our members about this issue, because it's a multifaceted issue. And there's a lot of different ways you can think about it. So we're crafting an advocacy statement for the Vermont Public Health Association, which we will bring to the public and the legislature in the coming months.
So when can we expect this? Will this be before the legislature starts? Or?
That is certainly my hope. Well, let me tell you, this is not easy.
I know.
A lot of people have a lot of different opinions about these things.
Well, thank you, Brian. I really appreciate the time and your effort in educating the public about the health effects of marijuana. So thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.
We've been speaking with Brian Flynn, the president of the board of the Vermont Public Health Association. Up next, we'll speak with Fred, who's a user, and get his perspective on the legalization of marijuana. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about marijuana, legalizing it. The number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. On the line is one of my favorite call-in people. It's Fred from Moncton Ridge. Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Great, Mike. How are you?
Great. Thank you. I'm assuming that you advocate legalizing marijuana. Why?
I do advocate the legalizing of marijuana. I've been a lifelong user for 48 years. It has enhanced my life thousands of percentage. And I'm one of the people who don't want to force it down people's throats. Mm-hmm. If you want to smoke, that's up to you. If you don't want to, I'm not advocating for children or bus drivers. Or there should be a way of tempering not the use of it, but the fear and the greed from it, I guess. That's what I went to the Senate hearing the other day on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two weird words I left with, that the council up there, that the Senate committee, they seem like those are the two words that they don't want it to come in. There's a fear that people don't know what they're talking about, and then there's a greed factor that the big business people are going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
There's already been proposed a three-tiered type of grow level, the bottom one starting at less than 100 plants, the next level at 500 or less plants, and the next one is the corporate deal, which is off the charts, 30,000 square feet or whatever.
Yeah. Do you worry about that commercialization, Fred? I mean, the big company?
No, I don't worry about it at all. It should be handled like any other business is handled. We don't want children using it. You know, I want to go back to your previous guest here just for a minute.
Okay.
So eating it and smoking it is entirely two different things.
Okay.
Marijuana becomes a different chemical when you eat it. It goes, when you smoke it, it goes to the lungs, and then it goes to the brain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you eat marijuana, it changes to a different subject, Delta 1 to Delta 9. It goes to the stomach, then to the liver, then to the brain. It's a different process, and it's a different substance when it hits up top.
So,
and I don't recommend anybody eating ganja.
Okay.
Nobody eating ganja. You cannot tell the dosage. You don't know what strain you're eating.
So just so that I'm clear, you advocate legalizing smoking marijuana, but you don't for eating marijuana or edibles.
I don't at this time, only because they can't seem to regulate it correctly. I've eaten ganja and not overdosed on it, but got very anxious when you eat too much of it. And if I'd have known, if there was a label on it that it had X amount of this, X amount of that, and X amount of this, then the next time I may not have done that particular sample. I may have tried a different sample.
Hey, Fred, I'm curious. You mentioned at the outset that the marijuana has enhanced your life. How has it enhanced your life?
Oh, I'm not the same guy that I was when before I was smoking ganja. I was a drinker. I was a hard ass. You don't want to see me after a six-pack of Budweiser. I'm not, you know, my attitude changes. So does everybody's after they're drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I got much more meditative, much more friendly, much more outgoing, and just a nicer chap to be around.
And do you have any side effects that you notice from your use of marijuana?
No, it depends on the strain. People say, oh, do you know, I'm a pretty good-sized fella. Did you get that from smoking? You only get it when you're smoking certain strains. There's 7,000 strains to be had on the seed finder today. And you can really find something that is going to, you can use at certain times of the day, certain types of a high that you like, whether it's something you want to read on late at night or something you may want to, put on or whatever. Some is very active, some is very sedative.
Mm-hmm.
Depends what you want.
But you don't worry about the – we just had a public health person on, and they talked about the mental –
it really didn't know much that he was talking about, only because – it's not his fault – only because it's a Schedule I drug, and they can't allow any research to be done on it.
So the they're taking some of their research, as he said, from the smoking aspect of it, not the edibles, but the smoking aspect of it, and saying there's probably respiratory, stroke, heart diseases, mental health issues. You don't buy that.
It's only helped my mental health. And as far as you can speak to my doctor or Willie Nelson's doctor, they probably give you the same dose, the same advice.
Yeah.
It hasn't hurt these men at all.
Let me ask you this. Are you worried about the impact on teens that maybe...
On teens?
Yeah, on legalizing marijuana?
No. I wasn't worried about... when I was a teen, I wasn't worried about the effects of alcohol on society. I drank a little beer then. I'm sure kids are still going to do what their parents don't want them to do. They were smoking pot before it's going to be legalized. Whether they're taking it from their parents or they're smoking it behind their parents' back occasionally. Some mm-hmm. children won't. Some kids won't get near this stuff. But I would have if I didn't have it around when I was young. But I would have used it when I was young.
What do you think is the best argument for legalizing this?
What are they afraid of, that little green plant? What is so... I don't know. It's just that you see it through the law enforcement. You see it through the judiciary. You see it through the medical community. They're just whipped about this little green plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't get it.
Let me take some phone calls, Fred. We're speaking with Fred from Moncton Ridge, one of my frequent call-in guests. And he had suggested that I talk to somebody that has used marijuana. And so he suggested himself. And so I've got him on the show. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. First of all, before we go to the phones, Fred, I really appreciate you calling in. I do want your perspective. I do want to understand where you're coming from on this issue. So thank you for calling in. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Mike.
And let's go to Waitsfield. Waitsfield, you're on with on open mic, and we have Fred on the line.
This is Seth.
Yeah. Yep. Go ahead.
Yes, I've been to Colorado. I took a trip there last winter and experienced the stores that they have available. They do check your ID when you go in. They do have edibles. They do have the plant itself. And all the edibles there are listed with a milligram percentage of what they have in them. So you can compare one to another to another.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so,
the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I'm also, in terms of the research and stuff, they've been doing it in Amsterdam for many years. There's a lot of documentation overseas. Not sure why that's so hard to get for our local economy in Vermont to do the proper research. Universities in different states have been researching it for years as well.
Well, thank you so much, Seth. I really appreciate that. Fred, what do you want to – any response to that?
Well, he's wrong. If universities all over the United States have not been doing research on it, it's very hard. I know a good friend of mine who's a doctor that I told you that I would like to have on the show.
Yeah,
they've got probably 1,000 gallons of hash oil down at the pot farm, the government pot farm in Mississippi. And they can't give it to anybody to do any research on in the country because it's a Schedule I drug.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's from the top down. It's the federal deal, you know. That's what everybody's bucking up against right now. It's a federal deal.
So I bet you support Bernie's efforts to legalize it at the federal level as well.
Well, Bernie's or who other, you know, Hillary Clinton's also speaking for some type of legalization.
Okay.
So I'm not just a Bernie fan. I'm a fan of, and I'm certainly not going to vote for Chris Christie. He wants to. Chris is going to take Colorado, Washington, any medical state, and that's it. Going to pull the Nazi deal and come in and cut all the plants down, and everybody is going to be back on the federal system if Chris is elected.
We're speaking with our frequent call-in guest, listener Fred, who supports legalizing marijuana, through smoking, and not necessarily through edibles. Would welcome your phone calls if you have a question for Fred. The phone number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Good morning, Rama. You're on open mic.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Fred. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, listen, I am absolutely in favor of ending the cannabis prohibition. And by cannabis prohibition, I mean the bit about marijuana, hemp, and the medicine that marijuana is used for. There's a lot of reasons why, but I just want to hit on a couple of points that I think are pertinent to today's discussion. One is, Fred is absolutely correct about the inability to actually study the positive effects or the non-deleterious effects of marijuana. There was a rather infamous op-ed piece that was written by a couple of doctors and was put in Scientific American, I think 6-7 years ago, I forget exactly when, and they talked about how they put in a proposal where they were going to study the positive medical effects of marijuana, and they put in this proposal, and it got kicked back by the DEA and other government officials, and got refused, and they resubmitted the proposal, but this time they were going to study the negative effects of marijuana, and it got approved.
Mm-hmm.
So this was put out by very reputable people in a very reputable magazine, so there's every reason to believe that's true. I also think in all this talk is we forget about the legal issues involved in this. Now, people may not be getting arrested for it, but I have gone to court and fought traffic tickets before. I know how much time is involved with it, the expense that's involved with it, etc. So even if you're not arresting people and throwing them in jail for minor amounts of marijuana, you are certainly creating monetary and other problems for them just for smoking some pot. And the last point that I'll leave it at this, because I probably could go on for an hour or two about this, but the last point I want to make...
I want to go home for the weekend.
Well, you know, it is so ridiculous how we treat medical marijuana. We can go out, you can go to a drugstore on any corner of any town and go and buy the most hardcore opiates with a prescription, but it is so restricted in Vermont, the use of marijuana as a medicine, that you can only get it for very few, very heavily prescribed conditions, and you got to be near death, literally, to get it. On top of that, any community in Vermont can vote to not allow medicinal marijuana to be sold within their community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this absolutely insane system that's set out to just punish people for this, for smoking marijuana. We've made the use of marijuana as a medicine extremely difficult, much more difficult than the most hardcore opiates out on the market. And we make it next to impossible for farmers to go out and grow hemp, all to keep people from smoking a little bit of marijuana in the privacy in their own home. So people are being deprived of medicine. They're not able to grow hemp out in their farm fields. And in the meantime, people are smoking pot in the privacy of their own home. So it's time to end this ridiculous cannabis prohibition.
Thank you, Rama. Thank you for your phone call. Fred, do you have anything to add to what Rama had said?
I can tell you right now that it costs too much, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't know where the price of $400 an ounce or $300 an ounce was picked out. I think years ago, the growers said, well, we're doing something that's highly illegal. We could be put in jail for this. Let's get what it's worth. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the time. Let's make it worth our while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's this money now. But it shouldn't cost more than $100 an ounce, this stuff.
Let me ask you this. Do you use marijuana for medicinal purposes or recreational or both?
Both.
Both.
Both. I go with the Bob Marley line. He said that it kept the aches and pains of life at an arm's distance away. And I like that. I like that.
Okay.
It's good for meditating. It's good for reading and relaxing. You want to get some stuff done and you want to smoke ganja, there's pot out there that'll make you get stuff done. You can't sit down.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Morning. I want to say I do agree with prohibition of any nature. Just creates a illegal economy, brings in the worst developments with it. If it is monitored and regulated by the state in some shape or form, it does remove that element and also makes it more affordable for people that do watch it. But in the same breath, I think it's amazing that one party is taking this and making this a front issue when we have so many other issues that need to be dealt with. And I do not believe this should be in the top five tiers of what needs, who we need to be putting into office. I think the Speaker of the House all of a sudden jumps ship and says, hey, I'm all for it. And this is this divide-conquer mentality they have. So this is how politics works in the country and the state. We got a sad state of affairs.
Hey, thanks, Sam. I really appreciate the phone call. Fred, you got 30 seconds. Anything you want to sort of wrap up on here? Anything you want to say?
Well, I wouldn't want Ken to get the drug strip out and run it around everybody at the office down there today. I think you'd find some people that probably wouldn't qualify. And it's all over the country. It's all over the world. It's out of the jug. You're not going to be able to put it back in. So quit bellyaching about it, because the genie's out of the bottle here.
Hey, Fred. As always, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate you calling in and doing this. You're a trooper, and thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Okay. This is Open Mic on WDEV. What we're going to do next, just so that you know, we're going to be talking with our friends and colleagues at Talk Radio News Service. And then we'll talk with Debbie Haskins, who's the ED of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Obviously, she has a different perspective than Fred. And we want to hear that perspective. And again, if you have people you want to have on to the show to talk about this issue of marijuana, it's msmith@radiovermont.com. This is WDEV 550, Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM, Warren, 96.5 FM, Barry, 101.9 FM in Island Pond. We're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. And of course, you can always listen to the podcast by going to our website, WDEVradio.com. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. While we wait for our Talk Radio News Service colleagues to call in, and they usually call in right about this time, I just wanted to give you a preview of next week. Actually, we're on Monday. We're going to be talking. On Tuesday. Remember, on Monday it is Open Mic with Hester Fuller, but on Tuesday we'll be speaking with Concerned Catholics of Vermont, and we'll be taking your phone calls. So that will be on Tuesday. And I wanted to give you a heads up as well. I want to alert you to something that Rusty Deweese and I are cooking up for December 29th. Both of us feel that many teenagers are struggling finding themselves or finding the right path. So on December 29th, we'll dedicate an entire open mic program dedicated to talking directly to teenagers and their parents about things we think are important to get their life on track. So that's December 29th, and on Tuesday we'll talk with the organization that's talking about what's concerning them about the Catholic religion, called Concerned Catholics of Vermont. So that's some of the issues that will be coming up in the week. I appreciate your phone calls. When we opened the mic up yesterday, the phones were jammed. We apologize if you didn't get in, but what we'll do at the end of the program today is give you an opportunity to use open mic again. So let's go down to our colleagues and friends at Talk Radio News, and let's speak with Victoria. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
It's the weekend. How's the weather?
You know, it's incredible. It's at least 67 degrees right now. The sun just came out. I'm looking at leaves of all different colors. Of course, we're not getting your kinds of colors. We never do, but we're definitely not this year. We've had such a funny summer that some of our trees aren't even turning.
Well, it's interesting. We had a late fall in terms of our color, our foliage. Most of the leaves are gone now, but you're absolutely right. We had a late fall. So let me just start off by a rearrangement of the GOP debate. It seems like Pataki and Graham are out. Huckabee and Christie are down on the undercard, and it's a smaller sort of main stage, isn't it?
Yeah, they're down from 10 to 8 on the main stage because they have lost Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee, who've gone down to the kiddies table where they now get to throw dinner rolls and play with their mashed potatoes with Rick Santorum and Bobby Jindal. So it will be four in the kiddie table undercard debate, which will be at 6 o'clock on Fox Business Network on Tuesday night. The main event is at 9 o'clock, which is a ridiculous time. Just absurd, because that means that people have to stay up till 11. It should be at 8. I mean, I'm, you know, it's not only because I get up at 1:30. I just think it's very late for a debate for people to have to watch.
What sort of is there any ramifications? I mean, both Pataki and Graham are polling almost at zero. Graham has had some good debates on the undercard, but he's still polling around zero. Huckabee and Christie are polling around 2.5. Does it make any difference if they're on the main stage or off the main stage?
I think it makes a difference to the caliber of the debates. Christie has been quite vigorous in the debates and has really, I think, added to the quality of them. He said some interesting things, and he's when he has spoken, when he's had a chance to speak, he's really added a fresh voice to the debate, and sometimes he's said some quite on-point things. Mike Huckabee, he's really there for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's there to enhance his career. He's not a serious candidate. He's never going to win. But he's important to a particular religious constituency. We shouldn't forget that. So he plays a role in all of this. So he'll be missed in that sense. You know, it's all the more airtime for Donald Trump, all the more airtime for Ben Carson to educate us about the origins of the pyramids and things like that.
It seems like Ben Carson doesn't take advantage of his airtime, at least he hasn't. And what surprised, look, Victoria, this whole legislative, this whole electoral session is really just been fascinating to me, because I just can't read it anymore. I mean, Ben Carson says nothing at the debates, and he comes out in the polls higher. So you tell me what's going on.
I don't think there's any real way of telling what's going on. It's almost as though the primary voters don't care what they say.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, because although it was that way, and yet the very interesting New Hampshire focus group of Walmart moms, and it was very clear they didn't like Donald Trump. I mean, some of them even said, yeah, he's all right until he opens his mouth, and they just didn't like the things that he said. They really didn't like him, and the polling shows that the women don't like him, and I don't think women are going to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when the person doing the focus group mentioned Ben Carson, they literally were going, ah, yes. They like him. They just like his affect. And, you know, he's got that very nice doctor affect. But then when he opens his mouth and he starts saying things that are patently absurd and untrue, now at this point, they're not taking any notice of that.
Hmm.
But if he ever wins the nomination, independent voters are going to.
What else is happening down there? We've been talking about presidential politics. Obviously, there's a jetliner that's been, it looks more and more, although the president was very careful not to say that it is, but suspects that it is, that it may have been had a bomb planted on it.
He has to be careful.
Yes.
Because all the evidence isn't in yet. It would be unwise and imprudent and frankly irresponsible for a world leader to say it definitely is when all the evidence isn't in. Even David Cameron was careful not to say it definitely is.
Right. Both of them were very careful to say it definitely is, but they said it's leaning towards that way, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they have access to the same information. They're sharing information. So they're leaning that way, and if they're leaning that way and they've got access to the intercepted messages of ISIS in the Sinai Peninsula, you're getting a pretty clear idea, and they've seen other things. Now, apparently Egypt, which is in charge of the investigation, is not sharing so far what they're finding on the black boxes, and the cockpit voice recorder is damaged, and they haven't been able to get very much off it yet.
Mm-hmm.
They have not asked for help from the United States. And the United States is not involved in the investigation. There were no Americans on the plane.
Mm-hmm. The what else is happening down in D.C.?
The jobs numbers are out for October.
And what do they say?
Well, it was expected, what they were expecting, the analysts, the economists, were expecting about 185,000 jobs,
mm-hmm.
which would have been better than the average for the last 3 months of 167,000 jobs. What they actually got, 271,000 jobs,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is very good.
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw a Wall Street Journal graph, and it was talking about, God, I can't remember what it was talking about, but it gave the impression that we were headed to some choppy waters, and your job numbers would indicate otherwise, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the Wall Street Journal had a very interesting, you know, they had five things to watch that came out yesterday, and, you know, they were talking about, you know, look for this, look for that, look for the other thing. And so they were not necessarily pessimistic, but, you know, there's been a strong dollar. There are some worrying things overseas that, you know, they just wanted people to be wary of. So that, generally speaking, economists and analysts who are looking at today are pleased because not only did the unemployment rate dip to 5%, but wages rose at the fastest pace since 2009. So generally speaking, it's robust, and it's surprisingly robust. So there's a sense that this is good.
Well, Victoria, I want to have a great weekend. I want to say have a great weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
I look forward to talking early next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've been talking with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, our friends and colleagues down in D.C. Up next, Debbie Haskins, who's the Executive Director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or Vermont SAM. And your phone calls will be welcome. So stand by and call in. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome to our Radio Vermont studios Debbie Haskins, who's the executive director of SAM Vermont. Now, SAM stands for Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which is a state coalition of Vermonters who are concerned about legalizing marijuana and think that legalizing marijuana poses a threat to Vermont's health, economy, youth, education, highway safety, and workforce. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and wanted to sort of get your perspective from your organization. What's the purpose of your organization?
The purpose of SAM Vermont, and we are a part of the national affiliate of the National SAM Vermont, although we receive no monies whatsoever, and most people talk about that with us, is to educate Vermonters about the science and the data around marijuana and to talk about the truth about this particular drug. There's a lot of misrepresentation about what we're talking about, and I had the privilege of listening in on your last two callers, so I have some interesting thoughts about whether we're talking really about prohibition, but it's really about gathering Vermonters, and there's lots of people across Vermont that are coming to us and saying, I'm not in favor once they realize what we're talking about. So it's an education and a bringing together of like minds, but also to have a real positive social discourse about a drug policy that would change all of Vermont.
We're speaking with Debbie Haskins, who's the executive director of Smart Approach to Marijuana. If you want to join our conversation, please give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We have a call coming right out of the blocks here. Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on open mic.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I was unable to hear the conversation prior to you putting me on air, so I'm not sure what was said. But I do believe your guest is an advocate for marijuana?
No, she is just the opposite. The okay. guest that I have now is just the opposite. The previous guest that I had on, Fred from Moncton Ridge, was an advocate for legalizing marijuana.
Okay, good. Then your guest on now and I are on the same exact same page here. You know, the Vermont legislature moving forward, I'm not sure at breakneck speed here, or is this just a kind of a fantasy piece of legislation, or how serious is it, Mike?
If I'm reading the political tea leaves right, and I'll let Debbie try to probably go at it. I think there's going to be a serious attempt to legalize marijuana this year. Debbie, your thoughts on that?
Yes, I would agree with that. We've heard that there's two bills that are going to come out of different committees, and the government ops has taken testimony. Interestingly enough, without a bill on the floor yet, there was one last year. So what we're hoping happens, Rob, is that the science comes forward and that we look at some of the things that are already in place. Vermont, which you may not be familiar with, put together a RAND report. We hired a company to come in and really assess and look at the data around what this would do to Vermont. And I hope that we're going to really look at that in depth, because it was 155 pages and we seem to be only talking about three things: the money that it potentially would bring in. We're not talking at all about what is the return on investment. What is this going to cost us as a state? And the other thing is, there are 12 different ways to talk about dealing with marijuana. We're only talking about commercialization. So I think it's a serious conversation this year, but there are a lot of partners that are coming forward throughout the state that are really not for this. I was yesterday down in Brattleboro, on the Brattleboro cable television. There's a Dr. Kloster down there, and he is an addictions counselor. Works in the field. There was a therapist there joining us, also a licensed alcohol and drug counselor like myself, very much against it. We have lawyers and, you know, people calling us, parents every day saying this is not the right thing to do for Vermont.
And your background is drug and alcohol counseling?
It is. I've worked in the school systems now for almost 30 years, providing prevention, intervention, and treatment. I have a private practice. And I actually volunteer to do this, Mike, because, and all of us do around the state that are talking about it, because we believe so strongly that this is the wrong direction to go in right now. We really want to just, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, we were talking about, let's look at the data, let's talk about the information, let's put together a committee. So we started that process. We got the RAND report, and now we're already talking about how it's going to be legal. It feels like we've jumped out the gate beyond several steps.
Rob, I apologize. We dumped you. You're back. Your question was, do you think it's a real possibility that the legislature will take this up this year? Both Debbie and myself say, yeah, it is a real possibility.
Right. Okay. So that's disturbing, and I'm not sure if other committees have gone, what the testimony has been like. But you know, I look at these issues, having, you know, being a father of two, and you know, the whole experience of kids growing up. Also, as an educator, junior, senior, high school level, I've seen this firsthand in my profession. And the question I always come at these things as a parent, and I think everybody should. Your legislators, the people on the committee, and then most of them probably are parents or have, you know, someone, children that they know. And I ask myself, okay, so the question kind of comes out, well, it's not going to do so much harm. You know, this is just, you know, opportunity and choices. But my question is, give me the solid reason if this is going to do any good for my child or my neighbor's child, okay? So what is the good of allowing marijuana on the market to be easily accessible by children? And we know the downsizing to the younger ages is just there. And from my experience with students I had, and actually Mike being in the military, you know, there's a problem in the military too. I can see no health benefit, no benefit whatsoever for children, adults, anybody. And I think, Mike, the Vermont legislature would be wise to get Patrick Kennedy on board. He is just a strong advocate against this. I've listened to him a couple of times on television and on websites, and he makes such a powerful argument and sensible argument that I just can't see how a legislature could move forward to introduce another substance and its addictive qualities into the population, the young population of Vermont. It's just beyond me.
Hey, Rob, thank you for your phone call. Debbie, do you want to respond to
that? I do. We've actually had Kennedy here. He was here about 3 years ago in the pavilion, and I was there as well as many other prevention folks, and the legislators were invited, and it was the first time I began to hear in the legislature that they were going to talk about marijuana, and one representative came over to hear him. We would love to have him come back along with Dr. Nora Volkov from the National Institute of Drug Abuse to come and talk about the brain. There are lots of folks that we would love to have testify and hope that get the chance to do that with our legislators.
The phone lines are really busy here, but one thing I wanted to, why should we be concerned about legalization?
Well, we're talking about a chemical drug that is incredibly potent and powerful. And you know, many times listeners and people that talk to me will divert right away and they will say, well, I think it should be legal so that people can have it as medicine. That's a whole other conversation. We have medical marijuana, and actually it hasn't been through the FDA process. So once one of your callers said, well, you know, I can go to my local pharmacy and pick up what I need. This hasn't been through the FDA process. And there's some discourse amongst the doctors about whether this is medicine, but that's a separate discussion. We have decriminalization. So what we feel we're really talking about is commercialization and the availability and the perception of harm that not only kids are going to have, but families going to be impacted. So when I think the last caller brought up a real good point is, I think about, we're talking about money that's going to come into the state on the backs of a drug. And we need to think about, how will this impact families? How will this impact schools? How will it impact businesses in a negative and a positive way, and weigh those? And I think they should be concerned, because while you and I might be thinking about marijuana in the THC content back in the 60s and 70s, we both know that it's 12 to 15% THC today. Well, what most people in Vermont don't know is that youth and college-age students and 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds are not even smoking it. They're vaping it. Mm-hmm. They're using an electronic device. Why is that important? Because the particular way in which they're doing it increases the THC content. So some of the people that are using a product, it's 50%, 60% THC and higher. So we're going to see some incredible downsides to young people's brains and health, but it's also going to impact us on the roads. So it's a lot of reasons we should be concerned.
We have jammed phone lines, and if you are trying to come in, get in, please try again. I'm going to try to clear most of these right now. So we're going to probably be late on the break here. So Dr. Bob from Burlington, you're on open mic. Good morning, Dr. Bob.
Yes, good morning. I must say that there are a significant scientific reality that completely goes against most of what I would say is the nonsense that I've been hearing from these people. First of all, let me say that I'm an internationally acknowledged expert on marijuana and the endocannabinoid system. I'm a former professor at the University of Vermont, actually a research professor there. But
I was chairman of the biology department at the University of Colorado in Colorado Springs. And the reality is that everybody makes marijuana-like compounds all the time. Everything in our body, from conception until death, is regulated by the cannabis we make. And by that, I mean our immune system, digestive system, cardiovascular system, skin, bones. Everything in our body from conception until death is kept in homeostatic balance by the endocannabinoid system. And cannabis, the plant, is the only thing that can impact into that system fully. And look at the consequences of having legalization in Colorado. There's a decrease in family-related crimes. In other words, you know, wife abuse. There's been a 25% reduction in Oxycontin-related deaths because cannabis is a much better painkiller for chronic use. There are so many benefits to using cannabis as an anti-aging drug. If you knock out, for example, the CB1 receptor, the receptor that gets people high in mice, those mice die prematurely. In other words, we need to be able to be high to whatever degree our body sets. And for many of us, we don't make enough for certain aspects of our health, like if you're depressed or if you suffer chronic pain or autoimmune diseases. We are able to currently treat cancers with high-dose cannabis extracts. The very extracts that they're poo-pooing, people are creating in their own gardens and curing their own cancers. We can completely control HIV with high dose of cannabis, and along with that, Kaposi sarcoma, which is the number one cancer in Africa.
Hey, Bob, and I really appreciate your phone call. I really do. We have jam phone lines here. I'm trying to move along as quickly as possible. Briefly, can you respond to Dr. Bob?
Most of what Dr. Bob's talking about is the medical aspects of it. We're not talking about that. What legalization is going to bring is commercialization to Vermont. Whether we talk about edibles or whether we talk about vape pens, we're talking about infiltrating and flooding the system for not only our youth, but for everyone that would be available, that you could grow it, that you could you could sell it. And yes, I understand that people are talking about a cost and there would be permits. And I look at the regulatory process and all of this, and I don't see how it's possible. I want to go back to what we've learned in two areas. One is we need to look at what we've learned around tobacco. You and I grew up in Vermont. I've heard you talk about it. We sued a tobacco industry that lied to us for years, and we got billions of dollars here in Vermont. And some of the first things that we did with tobacco, with that tobacco settlement money, was we took out vending machines and billboards and made accessibility incredibly difficult, not only for our youth. We provided quit lines and services to people that were using. It took tremendous money to be able to do that. And we can now look at our youth risk behavior survey and say, you know what? That made an impact. So now we're talking about doing the reverse. We're talking about making an availability of a drug, not only for youth, but for adults. And that's going to impact not only perception, but the ability to get this drug. We're not talking about the medical aspect of it.
Let's go to Steve and Barry. Steve, you're on open mic. Good morning, Steve.
Yes, good morning. As a former tobacco smoker, I realize the health issues involved. And I don't really see any difference. I think by bringing in marijuana, you're going to make more people smoke, and it'll become even probably more addictive than trying to quit cigarettes. And I mean, I quit smoking. It took me a long time to get past that. And there must be health issues with cancer and inhaling things very similar to cigarettes. And my concern, I don't like secondhand smoke. Personally, my concern is more with the youth. I think that adults have the right to make a decision if they want to smoke, and if they want to smoke or chew tobacco, it's already regulated. And my concern is keep this away from the kids.
Thanks, Steve, for your phone call. Debbie, you want to respond?
I couldn't agree more. And some of the studies that are coming out, and again, they're just some, are showing that there's a correlation between people that smoke cigarettes and people that smoked marijuana, as well as a correlation along with drinking. So that means that the rates aren't going down in Colorado. And, you know, we do have some ability to step back and look at what Colorado's doing. And I think we need to learn. Unfortunately, they're the social experiment. Do we want our kids and our families here in Vermont to be that social experiment? I don't. You know, I've heard a couple of callers say, well, what will it do? I heard a judge say on one of the calls, I think it was on your show, and he said, how will this improve Vermont for all of us? I've been told through the RAND report that 12% of our Vermonters smoke marijuana on a regular basis, and they're actually not being locked up, because you and I both know we don't do that in Vermont. Maybe nationally, but we don't do that here. So my question is how the other 88% of us are going to get along, and how is that going to impact our life? And, you know, when I think about kids, one of the things that concerns me in Vermont, we have a high rate of suicide. For our youth, not just our youth in high school, but college age and on. And marijuana exacerbates that. It is estimated that kids that smoke marijuana has a 7 times greater risk the more they smoke to be thinking about suicide, to be actually making a plan. And to me, that just seems unbelievable that we didn't think about legalizing a drug that it's going to make that worse. Now, we could sit here and we could argue all day about statistics, but if it's one life. When I got home from one of your talk shows, there was a phone call, and a mom had called me, and she said, how dare Vermonters talk about my daughter? And I said, what do you mean? I wasn't even on your show. And she said, they're talking about legalizing a drug, and my daughter got hooked on that drug, and it was marijuana, and everybody thought it was harmless. She died of a drug overdose, and she believes, this mom, that there's a correlation between the two. There's some research both ways. I'm not saying it's causal, but I'm saying whenever you put drugs into kids' hands, and the last caller talked about that, I also think about not just our kids, but how's this going to make us better parents?
Let's go to Forbes in Corinth. Forbes, you're on.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
As your program has demonstrated here, there's a wide variety of both emotional and technical information on the subject. Removing it from a handful of politicians' final decision, would your guest be opposed to a statewide referendum on the subject?
I don't know how I feel about that. I'd have to think about it. You know, I think that's a great conversation to have. I think what you've brought up is, should we take it away from our politicians? Making the only, I think certainly committees need to look at this. This is a very serious decision. And I think we need to all be educated as to implications. And I would agree, couldn't agree with you more. It's a very emotional issue for many people.
Welcome back to Open Mic. This is Mike Smith. We're speaking with Debbie Haskins, the executive director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. The group is trying to get information out. I can fairly say they oppose the legalization of marijuana. So we'd love to take your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. And they've been coming in. So let's go back to the phones and let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it sure was good to hear from Dr. Bob out in Colorado. We miss him up at UVM. He's quite a character. Anyway, for most members of the Vermont legislature, this is not a freedom issue. It is strictly a revenue issue, and this is what's got them so excited. I mean, because obviously we already have decriminalization. It is possible, if the concern is not about revenue, to simply legalize simple possession of small amounts without setting up an elaborate state-regulated framework for distribution, because obviously people really don't currently seem to have a problem with procurement of marijuana, so we don't need to solve that problem. But the concern here is about sending the wrong message. I think simple legalization does not send a bad message. What sends a bad message is when you set up a state-sanctioned distribution network, similar to what we have with alcohol, rather than simply embracing a harm reduction strategy to keep people from entangling in the legal system. Again, we don't have a problem with procurement. It's just that this is a matter of motive here. I think we have to look at most members, not all of them, but most members of the legislature are so hung up on this whole thing about this big pot of gold that we can turn this into. So I think we need to be very cautious about interpreting the motives of the people behind this movement here.
Debbie, you want to respond?
I couldn't agree more. think it is about money, and I think we need to be incredibly careful. Again, I go back to my original statement, is when we talk about the money we bring in, we can only do that if we continue to have more and more people coming into the state who are buying it or shipping it out. You know, we haven't talked about a couple of things that's going on in Colorado that I just think are worth mentioning. They're having a real difficult time keeping it in Colorado. We have kids here that are buying it on the internet from Colorado. Fascinating that it's in our high schools already. So I wonder how we're going to keep it both in our state and what are the problems that are going to come with it. So when we look at this big pool of money, which is, by the way, Colorado, I just listened to the governor speak the day before yesterday. He says, we're not making the money everybody thinks we are, because it's all going back into the enforcement and the diversion and the schools and the education. He says, we're not reaping in benefits. And the other big myth is that it's going to somehow cut out criminality. And so it hasn't in Colorado. So I think, you know, the last caller talking about, you know, what are we trying to do if we're not trying to get more users? I really believe we need to enforce the laws we've got, and we need to look at those in place. And I would love to see a scientific committee come together and who really would study this over the next 4 or 5 years, wait for the literature, because much of the research is done on the old THC content. And even then, the studies were pretty detrimental to what was going on in our kids. I would agree. I don't think anybody wants our kids to get it, but it's bigger than that. It's going to impact our older workforce and our businesses. So I think we need to be thoughtful about this.
Colorado has found that they didn't get the revenue. You just had mentioned that. They didn't get the revenue that they expected. And if you sort of take the experience in Colorado and try to translate it into Vermont, it's not unrealistic to think that we're talking about $5 to $10 million annually here, and then you take out from there 25 to 50% for the building and maintenance of your infrastructure to enforce this. Is that something that's being discussed at the legislature in terms of looking at the actual revenues that are going to be generated by this?
I have not seen it at all, and that's what really concerns me. I've seen, again, every headline or every comment or everything that comes out of committees. I'm not saying that they won't talk about it, but that they haven't done that. You know, the ER visits that have increased, the homelessness that's increased, you know, I was listening to the Department of Health the other day talk about unintended consequences. We need to think about what the unintended consequences are. And there was a gentleman that wrote to me, and he said, I own a bus company. He said, I'm scared to death if this becomes legal. I can't hire anybody now because they can't pass the urine screens because they have THC or CDL drivers. And so, I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to have a thoughtful conversation. And, you know, one of the callers talked about his difficulty with tobacco and how hard it is to get off tobacco. And one of the things we know that about marijuana and about any drug is the younger you start, the harder it is to get off, and how many times it takes and how intensive the treatment needs to be over a course. And sometimes it's lifetime. Addiction is a lifetime chronic illness. So we're going to add that to our health care. The conversation earlier this morning talked about we have bigger things to be talking about here in Vermont. We absolutely do. We should be talking about health care in our schools. This is going to impact the work that schools do and how they do it. And how, you know, one of the things that's going on in Colorado, of course, and it's no surprise to me having worked in a school, is guess what? Expulsions and suspensions have increased since retail markets have been in Colorado. And the other thing is Denver has the captive audience. That population is all of Vermont. That's the size of Denver. And that's kind of been brought home to me, is the only way we're going to get any revenues is to increase our use of kids and adults and bring in people that are going to smoke more. And is that what we want for Vermont?
When I was talking with Mary Alice McKenzie, she was one of the people who visit Colorado, yep, with the task group. And she said what surprised her was the commercialization, the size of the operations, of the commercial operations that have moved in to Colorado. What's your take on that?
Well, that's one of our main absolute concerns. We don't see how we're ever going to stop other commercialization from not only being advertised but coming in. If you follow anything in Colorado, you know that there's edibles that you can buy on the street, and then there's popcorn and pretzels and all kinds of sodas and candies and other things. And the commercialism is huge. It's an infrastructure in itself that springs up, and I wonder how we're going to control it. The other little piece is Colorado's right now in a lawsuit. All of the states around them are suing them because of the what it's brought into theirs. So we're going to have to be prepared for that.
Let's go to Peter in Waitsfield. Peter, you're on open mic. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was listening intently to the entire broadcast, and when Mr. Flynn prefaced his statement on the dangers of marijuana, it was in response to the point often made that marijuana is probably safer than tobacco and alcohol, and even if it were legalized, the number of people killed from marijuana use would pale to, in comparison to tobacco use. And I wonder if your guest is so concerned about mental health and the association of mental illness and violent behavior that is connected to alcohol use, if she would support outlawing the production, sale, distribution, and consumption of alcohol, which we tried with disastrous effects. Now, I one reason we should think about legalizing marijuana is marijuana is the most used, widely used illicit drug, and consequently a major source of funding for cartel activity south of the border. And we really ought to be concerned about what's going on down in Mexico, because they're our second or third largest trading partner, and they're essentially a narco state. The cartels have more control over the landmass of Mexico than the Mexican army or government.
Peter, I just, because of time, I'm just going to ask our guest here to answer the two questions that Peter had raised. One, would you support getting rid of the liquor in the United in Vermont?
No, I wouldn't support getting rid of liquor. But what I would love to do is I'd love to raise the alcohol tax so that we could take care of those that are addicted to it and in recovery and need support and keep it out of our kids' hands. And when we get that right, then let's have a conversation about other drugs. As a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, I don't compare drugs. They all do something, and they do something different to each person.
And Peter also mentioned that Vermonters are currently, the estimates are currently that they're spending about $125 million to $225 million in the underground economy here in Vermont, and that if we legalize it, Peter, I hope I'm getting this right, if we legalize it, you diminish that impact in terms of the illegal underground economy.
That hasn't borne true in Colorado, and I don't think it really would here. I think people are always going to buy it. I don't think that, and give away. And by the way, youth and young adults do a lot of sharing of this drug. They don't buy it a lot. They share it when they have it, and they sell it. So I don't see the revenue numbers changing that much based on what I'm seeing from Colorado, that we're going to have this big gain, and that's going to take that whole market out.
We've been speaking with Debbie Haskins, who's the executive director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Obviously, it's a group that opposes the legalization of marijuana here in Vermont. Debbie, if people want to get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you?
They can email me, and it will come directly to me, and that's infosamvt@gmail.com. They can call my business line, which is 456-1479, and I'll be the one answering the phone. They certainly can visit our website, which is sam-vt.org, and there's lots of information on there that's science-based and what we're doing and where we're going to be and talking and certainly invite us to come and have a discourse about this conversation.
Debbie, thank you so much for being on Open Mic.
Thanks, Mike.
This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. I apologize. We have run over. We had planned to have an open microphone. You love the open microphone, and I realize that, and I apologize. But there were jammed phone lines. I wanted to get to all your calls, and we won't have time today to get to the open mic. Here's what I'm going to do for Monday. I'm going to open up a full hour. On Tuesday, I will open up a full hour of open mic and make sure that you do get your phone calls in, and we can talk about if Ken from South Burlington, if you wish to call, about the issue that you raised yesterday, and I thought you raised a good issue, and it's something I want to explore in terms of the workforce at state government and what we were talking about. We had somebody that had called in and said that they were a little disappointed in how hard the state workers work. I defended the state workers and said everyone that I know, and I've been in state government 8 years or so, 10 years I think it is, was the experience that I had was not the experience that the gentleman that called in had. I see people working very diligently and very hard, and was defending the state employees. Ken came and raised a good point that more and more managers are becoming political appointees that don't necessarily know the ins and outs of an agency, and maybe the management is a little lacking, and I'd like to sort of explore that with him. I'd also like, if you would email me at msmith@radiovermont.com, I'd like to talk to some opponents of the Addison gas pipeline. I think that's an important subject that I'd like to talk about. And also on open mic on Tuesday, if you want to talk to me about further on the marijuana, I would really appreciate it. Of course, we always sort of gravitate towards politics, and that's something that we can talk about on Monday as well. You know what I really appreciate is all the phone calls we got. We definitely got jammed up today. We got jammed up yesterday. And, you know, that's good and bad. The good side is I really want to listen and hear from you, and you have responded. The bad side is that we do get jammed up on those phone lines, and some have complained that they're getting busy signals. Well, try again. We've got a lot of phone lines, and we really would like to take your phone calls and listen to your opinion. I want to thank my guests today. That includes Brian Flynn, who's the board president of the Vermont Public Health Association, Fred from Moncton. Fred was a great guest, and he's from Moncton Ridge. And Debbie Haskins, another good guest of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And next Tuesday, we'll speak with the group called Concerned Catholics of Vermont. And we'll take your phone calls, as I had mentioned. And remember, I had mentioned this at the break, at the 10 o'clock break as well, at 10:05, that Rusty Deweese and I are cooking up something for December 29th. Both of us feel that we should use this program here to reach out to those teenagers that are struggling, finding themselves or finding the right path. So on December 29th, we'll dedicate an entire show of Open Mic to talking to teenagers and parents about what we think are important to get them on the right path. This is Open Mic on WDEV, AM 550 Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM in Warren, 96.5 FM in Barrie, and 101.9 FM in Island Pond. We're streaming on WDEVradio.com, and you can also find the podcast there. This is Mike Smith. Have a great weekend. Hester Fuller will be in on Monday, and we'll talk again on Tuesday.